Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Point podcast. Today, we're here with Dr. Hesu Witten. And Dr. Witten is the founder, I guess, of the Witten Method, which we're going to hopefully delve into today and talk about his past and how he, I guess, curated the idea and what he's up to now. And there's loads to talk about. And as we talked about a minute ago, there's 11,000 words worth of, I guess, condensed information of his life. And that's, you know, I guess, an abridged version. So I can't wait to hear what he's got to say about everything. How are you doing, Dr. Hesse? Are you okay today?
I'm doing great. So great to talk to you. Congratulations on your podcast. I mean, the subjects you cover are so important today. So I really applaud the work that you're doing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. So let's start off with you giving a little introduction to you and your, because you're a chiropractor at the moment, or one of the thing, one of the many things you're involved in is chiropractory. Give a little brief on how you got to where you are, and then we'll go in deep, more detail later.
Yeah, I had a friend suggest that I write kind of like a history of the work that I've developed. And so I thought, yeah, that would be a good idea to put on the website and just kind of explain, because you don't just develop your own healing system. There's quite a bit of a backstory. You don't just wake up and go, I think I'll, you know, recreate the art of holistic healing. And so I was started writing, you know, how I got here. And 2 days later, I'd had 11,000 words down. I was like, oh, my God, I never intended to write that much. But there was quite a, you know, quite a story. So, you know, it's all about how do we become free? And so that was kind of like the overriding idea. How do we become free of self-limiting beliefs, things that we picked up from childhood? How do we become free of addictions? How do we become really healthy so our physical body isn't kind of holding us back from doing the things that we want to do? So, you know, my grandmother, she got sick with cancer when I was about 12 years old, and she taught me a lot about nutrition and just how toxic the standard diet is these days, and that we really need to be careful what we consume, and that we need to be detoxing. So I got a lot of insight into the importance of nutrition and detoxifying our bodies. And, you know, I was an athlete, so I really liked body work. I did gymnastics, I did judo, I did swimming, I did all these sports. And so I really liked physical hands-on healing and chiropractic and massage. So I was looking how to combine structural healing work, the nutritional aspect. And then because of my own, you know, challenges as a kid growing up with a family with divorce, you know, I knew that the mental and emotional aspect was really crucial if we want to be free psychologically. So I really set out to develop a complete healing system that covered all the aspects of what it is to be a human being. So that's the basic background.
No, that sounds amazing. When you say the complete aspects of being a human being, what do you think those things are? What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean,
it is to be human.
A lot of people throw around the word holistic. And the word holistic means the whole person. And so I say, like water, H2O, is it solid, liquid, or gas? And obviously, it can be solid ice, it can be liquid, or water vapor. It's all H2O. And so then I ask people, human being, is it solid, liquid, or gas? Right? So just like water, we're solid. We have these bones, these muscles. We can't walk through walls, right? We're structural beings. And then the liquid part, our blood, they say we're 70% water. So all the nutrients and the nutritional aspect, that's kind of like the fluids of the body. So we, you know, medicine mostly focuses on the biochemistry, and that's kind of the liquid aspect of the human being. You know, the nutrients and the toxins and, you know, all the things that are dissolved in the blood and the intracellular fluid. And the gas is, everyone laughs at that, but it's everything that you don't see when you cut somebody open, the personality, the stress, the core emotions, the, you know, belief systems and things like that. So all of that combined makes up the whole person, and they all affect each other. So let's say you have a kid that has low self-esteem, or, you know, their parents are critical. It affects the posture. And then if you think, okay, you have low self-esteem, then you choose poor foods, and that affects the chemistry, right? So everything, the depression, it affects the chemistry. So, so they all kind of affect each other. And so the whole key with muscle testing is you have somebody on the table, where do you start? You know, do you start with the bones and the joints? Do you start with the nutrition? Do you start with somehow trying to heal the emotional level? It's very confusing because each person is unique. So, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It's a challenge for how do you go about healing a multidimensional and unique human.
Yeah. It's possibly not only just that we're a mixture and a combination of those three things, but also some people will be more impacted by one of them than the other. So that adds a whole nother level of sort of interplay and complexity to working out how to heal them. So it's, yeah, fair play to you. It's and there's probably even more than three, to be fair. Who knows how unlimited we are as beings, which is, I know, something that I'd like to get onto and that you've spoken about a bit. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cause you, awesome. So let's move on to the.
Yeah. It's breaking up a little bit.
It is. Yeah, it is. Let me see if I'm going to turn the Wi-Fi off on my phone. That might not make any difference, but let's just see.
Yeah, you had frozen for about 10 seconds, but it's streaming good now.
Yeah. Is it back again now? Your camera goes off a little bit. Maybe we don't need camera, but we probably do.
Okay.
We'll go with it. We'll go with it. We'll just see how it goes. We'll take our time. The Witten method, did it originate from, is it Keynes? How'd you say it? Kinesiology or something? I've butchered that.
Kinesiology.
Okay, perfect. So explain to the.
Well, ology means study of. Kinesio is the motion. Kinesthetic, it's the study of motion. And the way we move is through our muscles. So kinesiology is a whole field of the study of muscles and joints and how we move. So applied kinesiology was a technique developed in the mid-60s. And so that was kind of like the original technique, and it grew, and it continues to grow as people study it and kind of discover new, techniques and new ways to do things. But that was the original technique. So I studied that from books before chiropractic school. And at the time when I was in school in 95, there was a whole new technique called clinical kinesiology that had fixed a lot of the shortcomings of applied kinesiology. So applied kinesiology could find things and fix them, but it had no ability to determine the priority. So it could find things but randomly fix it, which is, it's when you can find the top priority, it's kind of like hitting the first domino, and then it knocks down all the other ones. So if you can correct the top priority, you can fix maybe 20 or 30 compensatory problems that were simply adaptations to the original problem. So it saves you a whole lot of time if you can determine
absolutely
what the top priority is. But clinical kinesiology, it incorporated acupuncture and homeopathy, and it started to delve into emotional healing. But it took this technique called neuroemotional technique, and it kind of ripped off that technique. But it was basically a tapping technique for clearing emotions. And so I studied that work with a mentor for about 3 years. And then it was the most advanced technique by far at the time. But after I got into it deeper, I realized there was a lot of pieces still missing from that technique. For one, it was way too complicated. It took me a couple years to master that technique. There's probably less than 10 of us in the world that had mastered that technique. And I just thought how it approached mental and emotional healing was extremely superficial. And so I really wanted to go deeper into how we actually get clear at the deepest level of, you know, all the mental and emotional programs that we're all stuck with. And so that was about a 20-25 year journey to try to really to try to create the deepest possible system and make it simple so that it's teachable, so I could teach, you know, thousands of people eventually how to do it. And
take out the complexity. Yeah, that's very important if you're going to address the masses, isn't it, and make it easily consumable. Absolutely. So one of the things I was wondering is, are you, in your mind, are you eradicating problems and returning people to the natural state of a human being, or are you improving them to a higher state of being that we're incapable of accessing as a result of the conditions that that curtail us in our lives? Do you get that? Is it a case of down or up? In a simplified sort of way.
Well, I think of it as like if you have a river, and I think of a human body like a river, and you can point to many different examples. Like our intestines, they need to be flowing. If they're not, we're constipated. If our bone, you know, if the bones in our spine are out of place and they're pinching the nerves, then the electrical pathways won't flow. If we're holding on to negative emotions, you know, emotion means energy in motion. So if our emotions aren't flowing, they're stuck. So we're trying to get everything flowing in our body, our emotions, our, you know, nerve pathways, our digestive systems, all of our biochemical pathways that can be impeded by toxins or deficiencies. And so if you have a river that's not flowing, you don't push the river. You simply remove the boulders. You remove the things that are blocking. So our divine intelligence is what heals us. So all I do is remove the things that are blocking the self-healing mechanism. So the real goal is to help the body function more efficiently. And so removing, just basically to organize the flow of energy in the body so it can heal more efficiently and, you know, and operate it at its highest level. So that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, I like that, the notion of removing the boulders and the logs away from the river so that it can flow in its natural state. That's really good.
Yeah.
So what, in your opinion and your experience, what are the most common, like, toxins and impediments that are, and in which system, I suppose, of the body are people most affected by and are having the worst impact on them? That was a big question. But yeah, do you get that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big question. You know, what's the biggest challenge?
It is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say that sitting is the new smoking, right? So most people aren't moving.
Really? Wow.
They're not moving enough. They're not. Okay. So that destroys the metabolism. You know, the metabolism of sitting is slightly above that of sleeping. And so we're just not moving as much as historically or ancestrally that we used to move, right? We go to gyms to move. We shouldn't, you know, we're sedentary too much. So that's one problem. Sleep is a big problem. Junk food's a big problem, you know, processed foods and all of that. Most people are indoors too much, so we're not getting enough sunlight, either the blue light during the day, which, you know, the blue light stimulates serotonin, and serotonin makes melatonin. So without the blue light in the daytime, we don't get the melatonin so that we can sleep properly. You know, if we don't sleep, we don't heal, and that affects us emotionally. It makes us depressed. And so there's a lot of problems with that. Stress is huge. I mean, obesity is an issue that's thrown off, like I say, by being sedentary, by being so full of toxins. And the fat is a very safe place for the body to store toxins. So because we're so toxic, our body holds on to fat as a safe place to store those toxins. So if we can detoxify the body, then the body won't have a need for the fat. And so I think that'll go a long way with the obesity epidemic. But like you say, there's so many different factors. I mean, the pandemic was just horrible on people's psyche and, you know, mental health. You know, this idea of staying six feet apart from each other. I mean, we're social beings, and they made people to feel afraid of being in contact with people. So that stress, I think, did tremendous damage to people socially. But you know, we could go on for days. What's wrong with that?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but being outside, being social, being active, eating real foods. Foods that have one ingredient, you know, an apple, a carrot, right? One ingredient. And I really like the intermittent fasting. I start eating at 10 a.m. and I stop eating at 7 p.m. And so having those 15 hours where the body can detoxify and process and digest and get rid of toxins, it really helps take the burden off the body. You can sleep better and, you know, just stay lean, you know, and allow your liver and your kidneys and your intestines to just kind of process what you consume, you know, for those 9 hours of Absolutely. The day. So that's a lot.
What do you eat? Yeah, that's a lot, but you're right. There's so many things. What foods do you, what is like a diet for Dr. Whitten?
Well, you know, what I do is muscle testing. So everybody has a perfect diet for you, but a perfect diet for them.
Okay.
So what I do is not right for anybody else. I mean, sure, there's commonalities. I haven't eaten any animal products for about 7 years. So with the muscle testing, I can determine if I'm low in protein, if I'm low in omega-3 fats, if I'm getting all the nutrients I need. So, every day I check just to make sure that I'm not deficient in any of the essential nutrients. So by being able to do that, I can get everything that I need. See, I tried to be a vegetarian in the 80s and in the 90s, and I got really sick. But now you can go in one store and you can get all the legumes and, nuts and seeds and, soybean, tofu, protein powder, pea protein powder, quinoa. In one store, you can get everything you need. So it's not like long ago when we didn't have access to everything. So it's really easy to be plant-based right now. But you just have to, I have five protein sources. Like, I eat beans, but I muscle test, and my body only wants beans like every 4 or 5 days, so I'll have nut butters. I'll have a smoothie with protein powder and almond butter. I'll have rice or quinoa, and I get the rice without, the arsenic or, organic rice that doesn't have the arsenic in it, or quinoa, which is a complete protein. And I'll add some form of protein like tofu or tempeh and vegetables. And for fats, I might put olive oil or avocado, things like that. And so,
yeah,
real food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure. Well, I imagine that maybe the average diet in the US is worse than the average diet in the UK. More choice. You guys must have so much more choice than we have over here. But we have no idea what the food that we eat does to us. I watched this video and it was talking about this pesticide that if you give it to frogs, it literally turns male frogs. A percentage of the frogs that you give it to, it will turn male frogs into female frogs. Yeah. And this pesticide is on like so many of the foods that we eat. There's a lot of talk about oppression and things nowadays and people being oppressed. And I often wonder if the things that we're told we are oppressed in the ways in which we are oppressed are just cover-ups for the other ways in which you are oppressed, so that those that are doing the, I guess, somewhat insidious or profiting from these things can carry on sort of unchecked. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Food is and sleep. You spoke about sleep. How do you? Because so many people struggle with sleep. How is your sleep and how has it improved? And talk about sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I think exercise is great for sleep. We burn up all that, energy by working out, and then our body is just like, at the end of the day, it's just ready to go deep, but when we're sedentary all day, it's almost like we're almost in a, sleep state all day long. I think staying, obviously everybody knows about the screens and the blue light, and the blue light triggers that it's daytime. So if we're using blue light at night, watching the tele, as they say in the UK, or the phones. So that, I think the red glasses and the red light therapy are helpful. But just getting away, blue light blocking, things like that, and getting blue light during the day and blocking it at night, I think that's good. But I think there's some good evidence that, sleep all has to do with the cortisol cycles. So you wake up when cortisol comes up and you fall asleep when cortisol drops. Yeah. And there's two humps of cortisol during the daytime. And what they found is that by grounding, sleeping with a grounding pad, that normalizes your cortisol cycles. They've done some good scientific studies on that. So they have bed sheets.
What's a grounding pad?
Yeah, it's a sheet that you put on your bed that has carbon and copper wire. It's just like threads. And then you connect it to it to like a silver cord that either goes out the window to a ground rod. So it makes your bed identical to the ground. But you can.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah. So they discovered this in 1999 or 2000. And the guy who discovered it lived in the town next to me. So in the book, it's called Earthing. And so I was married at the time, and the woman I was married to had been married before me, and she'd never been pregnant. And we'd been together for 6 years. She'd never been pregnant. The next month after getting grounded, she got pregnant. And so in addition to good sleep, it gets your hormones balanced. It gets cortisol balanced. Yeah. And that technology, I think my son is the first child that was conceived and born.
Yes.
Probably thanks to that. So we're the only species that doesn't touch the earth 24 hours a day.
Very true.
So our brain, our heart is an electrical system. And because we don't touch the earth, we've disconnected from that electrical relationship to the earth, because we don't have skin to skin contact with either a tree or a lake or the ocean, which is all of that is grounded. So this reestablishes a ground at the most important time, which is while we're sleeping. It's okay if we're a little bit wired during the day, but it's not okay to be wired when we're trying to sleep. And so by getting grounded,
absolutely,
that's really helped a lot of people sleep. So earthing.com is one of the websites where you can get some of those products.
Yeah, I think I watched a mini documentary about earthing and how all these people were talking about the conditions that they had that were mitigated. The symptoms were mitigated as a result of earthing. So yeah, you speak a very, very truthful point in that we're the only animal that doesn't at least have some point of contact with the earth pretty much ever, really, because you know, we have shoes on, and unless we're at the beach or whatever.
Right.
Let's talk about what is muscle testing, because that's obviously a very important thing relevant to you. So let's talk about muscle testing and specifically what it is.
Yeah. So there was a discovery made in the 60s that when you say something that is true, that a muscle will hold strong if you push on it. And if you say something like, "My name is Fred," the muscle goes weak. Okay. So that little party trick is very useful, because your brain has all the information about you at the subconscious level. So your brain is like what I call a biocomputer. It has all the data on you emotionally, all the data on you chemically and structurally, all your entire history. It's like a library of data. And so since you're a unique human being, your brain also knows what you need for healing. So the premise of this work is, one, that you have all this information, that you know what you need for healing. And by God, if I could get access to that information, I could really help you as a doctor. But how do I get access to that library of data? Well, we can't get direct access. We can't go into your head and extract the data. We can't put a flash drive in your ear and download it. So, you know, although this Neuralink, I think they're trying to figure out how to do stuff like that. But
yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah,
crazy.
Elon Musk.
So the brain, in addition to having all this data, it controls our muscles. So when we say something, so let me step back a sec. So the way a light bulb works is that if you flip a switch, you have an electric wire and the electricity flows to the light bulb. The light turns on. You turn the light switch off, the electricity stops and the light bulb goes off. So in this analogy, the nerve is the electric wire and your muscle is the light bulb. And so so what was discovered is that if I make a statement that your subconscious, your brain, your biocomputer agrees with, the electricity flows and the muscle holds strong. Essentially, we're using muscles to see if the electricity is flowing, or if you say something the body doesn't agree with, the electricity turns off and the muscle simply turns off and goes weak. And so using that, we can make statements that can be answered with a yes or a no or a true or a false. And so we can get very clever with the statements we make. So if I was to work on you and I said, is your body's highest priority a structural therapy? And my muscles or your muscle would go weak on that. Is your highest priority a chemical priority? And it holds strong on that. So I know it's a chemical priority. Okay. Is it a deficiency or is it a toxicity? Should we treat it with diet or with supplements? So using questions like that, we can get yes, no answers. And your brain will guide us to exactly what it is that you need. So it's the first system that... The system I've created is the first system that I believe is what I call a patient-driven system. So it's not driven by my brilliance, my big ideas, my opinions, my philosophy. Mm. My whole job is to be quiet and listen to what your body's asking for. And my intelligence only serves to ask good questions.
Yeah, I love the notion of all the answers being in the individual that you're treating is really powerful. And it's really interesting when you talk about truth, because there's a lot of, you know, truth can be quite a controversial topic, and like, you know, what is the truth? And I you can go down sort of a very convoluted rabbit hole, but there's a famous psychologist called Jordan Peterson. I'm not sure if you heard of him. No. And he talks about how when he says something that he knows not to be true, and I've been practicing this for a long time now, ever since I heard him say it, because I thought it was really interesting. When he says something that he knows not to be true, he feels as if his body is kind of like falling apart a bit and kind of collapsing, and he doesn't feel as steady. And I think, and I've practiced that so much now, so that when I think something or when I'm about to say something that I know isn't true or that is unnecessary or that I'm just showing off or I'm being frivolous, I go, well, I don't even go. My brain just goes stop. And I love the notion of the truth is embodied in us. Mm-hmm. And it actually has an actual impact on who we are and as a person. It's a great sort of reason to encourage people to tell the truth, because what you're kind of saying is that if you lie too much, you'll become sick in some ways. And I think that's completely true, actually. I think, so that's really cool. I love that that's part of it.
Yeah. I mean, the muscle testing is just, it's like it's a trick to access your intuition. So ideally, you wouldn't need to muscle test. You would just intuitively know, you know, like you're talking about, you know, that wasn't true. Like you just instantly know it and you feel it. So
yeah, you feel it and you know that it's not true. Can you muscle test yourself? Can you muscle test you, or do you need someone else to muscle test?
Muscle test.
How does it? Can the brain trick itself?
Yeah, muscle testing myself and clearing stuff is how I start my day. So I start my whole day working on myself and making sure that all my pathways are clear. Good. And, you know, I'm at my best when I get out of bed. So I love doing it. I've really developed this. I mean, we do everything for our own reason. So I developed this system to fix me. You know, with my upbringing, I had lots of stuff to fix. Let's put it that way. So I developed this to fix me. And then, you know, I developed a whole system. And then when I, you know, work with somebody else and I touch you, I become part of your circuit. And then I just work. I just do the same things I would do to fix me. I just do it with your body. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah. You're just sort of, you're becoming part of, you're channeling through one another. And there's, what's it called? I think it's transference, isn't it? You get like psychological transference when someone speaks to you and you take on their sort of emotions and, energy, I suppose. I'm sure energy is actually a really basic term. I'm sure there's far more to it than that, which you know. But I heard of the. I know transference is a thing. So you touched briefly on your childhood. I've read because obviously your childhood was the first bit of your sort of bio thing. So I read a lot about that, and you talked about some sort of immune difficulties. What were they? What does that mean?
Yeah. You know, we all have.
As much as you're comfortable talking about.
I'm comfortable talking about it because, you know, it's interesting when you look at the kind of person you are and you kind of see how you've taken on parts of your mother and parts of your father, and you're kind of like, you know, an amalgamation of both of them. And a lot of times the traumas that we experience later on in life, we realize, man, those were very powerful experiences to shape who we later became. You know, hopefully they don't send us down into, you know, a dark pathway. But if we can, you know, kind of see the gold in those hard experiences, we realize that they didn't happen just to punish us, just, you know, because, you know, God has some kind of sick perversion of making us suffer, but it was like really to strengthen us and to, you know, have our life go a certain pathway that, you know, that's, I kind of think of as we were born and we decide to come into a body that we, you know, we're here to learn certain lessons. And, you know, if we do a good job in learning those lessons, then, you know, we can fulfill whatever our mission is. And so my mission is to bring a whole new technology to healing. So it's not simply symptom relief and profiteering off of people's illness and, you know, superficial type stuff. I'm like, how do we actually get to our full potential? How do we actually get to, you know, our inner genius and be brilliant, you know, and be creative and be loving and be, you know, powerful and healthy and not relying on pharmaceutical products to, you know, keep us alive. And, you know, what's our potential if we're actually clear and, you know, living our best lives? So, you know, I think developing the technology to clear all that garbage so we can get back to the path that we're supposed to be on. So, as a child, my mother was a week shy of her 22nd birthday when she had me. She'd had lots of trauma, incest, and, you know, those kinds of things. She was alcoholic before there was a term, alcoholism. I was born in 1968, so she was just kind of this free spirit, hanging out with Ram Dass and doing LSD and drinking alcohol. My dad was a grad student at Harvard. He was a PhD student, and he was the student body president at Harvard. So my mom was hanging out with Ram Dass. My dad was leading the Vietnam protests in Boston. And so I was on my dad's back at these rallies with thousands of people. And so he was very political. And, you know, I took quite a political role during COVID. So I have that piece to me as well, you know. So my dad's kind of like a science mind. He's very like, okay, what's the proof? He was a professor at Harvard as well. He won awards as a professor of anthropology. And then my mother was into Eastern philosophy and all this metaphysical stuff and, you know, like infinite potential. And so I kind of married those two things. So I have a very kind of analytical mind, but it's very expansive as well. So although I, you know, with the muscle testing, there's no machine or there's no, you know, there's no computer that can verify it. You actually have to be your own authority, your own, you have to kind of step into yourself being the authority. There's nobody else to validate you. And that's a really hard thing for most people to do because, you know, what's an expert? What is truth? Well, with muscle testing, you actually have to learn how to trust yourself again, which is a profound thing. but I was always trying to find experiments to validate it. So like I went to visit my cousin who was in chiropractic school in Los Angeles, 2 hours away. So I was on the phone with him and I said, look, I'm going to muscle test what bones you have out over the phone. I'm going to muscle test this using kinesiology. Then I'm going to drive over there to you 2 hours, you know, later, and I'm going to adjust the bones that I diagnosed over the phone. And we're going to see if that feels good. And, you know, and I adjusted the bones. I wrote it down on the paper and he said it was the best adjustment he'd ever had. So I'm always trying to find experiments to validate it. So.
Yeah. There's a great, I haven't read it. So excuse me for referencing it because I should have read it, but there's a great book called The Master and I think it's Emissary or something. It's written by a guy called, I think it's Rob McGill Kirst or something. He's from England. I'm not sure. And the point is he talks about how the reason our brain has got two hemispheres is because there are two ways of seeing the world and both are accurate and needed. And the right brain is basically sees everything as infinitely connected to one another and pattern recognition and everything that to the extreme that you can possibly push it. And then the left brain is the complete opposite, which is where everything is finite and detached and isolated. And one of the things that we do when we dream apparently is, or in theory, because we don't really know anything about dreaming, given how complex it all is that the right brain tries to send messages through to the left brain to create order out of the chaos of the right brain. And what you just spoke about with your parents there is really interesting, how your mum was basically far more right-brained and your dad was more left-brained, and you were given the benefit of being able to watch that. And then you almost became, I think it's called the corpus callosum, the middle part of the brain that That's mediates it. Between the two. And you kind of embodied that to some degree, and hence why you've, and that's what the Witten method is to some degree. It's the combination of those two things and lots of things, because that's such an important thing that we're all pursuing. It's that combination of those two things. So that's really cool.
Well,
great book. I need to read it.
I think what you're touching on, I love what you say there, you know, about the two hemispheres of the brain. You know, there's a great limitation to approaching healing simply from the left brain, from the logical mind, almost like a medical, you know, model, because 10 people could have asthma and they could all have 10 different, you know, ways they got there. It's like if you're at the football stadium, you've got 80,000 people there, but they all got there a different way. They all ended up in the same place, but they got there through a different way. So if you approach healing simply through a logical brain, you're not honoring the diversity and the uniqueness of the person, and you end up guessing. You're just like, well, try this medicine or try this herb or try this vitamin, and you end up resorting to guessing, you know, based on studies and this and that. So it's not personalized in any way. If you only approach it from the right brain and you just say, okay, I'm going to wave my hands over you and we're going to ring a tuning fork and wave it over you and put magnets on you and pray over you. I mean, there's something kind of, you know, it lacks the meat. So I think the best healing system is a combination of the head and the heart. If you can balance the head and the heart, so you've got your basis of knowledge, but then you also have the ability to set that aside and listen and tune in so that your mind's not going, and it's blocking your ability to actually listen to the patient. If you can combine that, I think you've got the ultimate healing system. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And because I always remember a few years ago, I was, I'm quite tall and thin. And when I was like 18, 19, I kept on going to the doctors because I would, every time I stood up, I would like shake and everything would go sort of fuzzy. And if it was really bad, I would almost like fall to the floor because I was like, I'm going to fall over. And I went to see like three or four different doctors, and it still amazes me. They all said it was something different. And I just remember thinking, that is mad how I've come here with the exact same symptoms. And another thing about being a medical practitioner is you project your own biases onto the patient that you're seeing, and you can't help but see them through the lens of you and your, you know, the things that called out to you when you were studying medicine, or the things that you're more well versed in. And the great thing about your method is that it's none of that gets in the way, because it all comes down to the person that you're treating.
So it's like
if
you went to a restaurant and the waiter told you what they thought was the best thing on the menu, you know, you should get this item, right? I mean, you go to a restaurant and you look at it and you choose based on, you know, what sounds good to you. And so every other healing system is doctor driven. It's kind of like going to a restaurant where the waiter tells you what to eat. And so I have my menu. This is my menu. Okay, so I consider myself a waiter. And on that menu is everything that I know how to deliver. I know how to adjust you. I know how to massage you. I know how to do fascia release. I know how to do craniosacral work. I know how to evaluate the organs and test for vitamins and foods. And I've developed my own system of energy healing. So that's my menu. So I offer this to you. And then I ask you, but not the conscious mind. I ask your subconscious mind. Out of all these options, what approach would be the most appropriate for freeing you of whatever has you stuck? And so on here are things like, I feel good enough. I feel good enough. And on here is good enough in general, good enough to be loved. I feel good enough in my physical beauty. I feel good enough financially. I feel good enough socially. I feel good enough intellectually, morally. I feel, you know. So I have this huge menu of issues, and the body can choose, hey, this is my biggest issue. Let's work on this one. And then we go to work and clear the blockages around that one, clear the, you know, how the energy got stuck. You know, it could take us to adjustments. It could take us to, you know, certain places where we're storing, you know, toxic energy. And so it's beautiful, because I approach a healing session with the premise that I have no idea what you want. You tell me what we should work on. So it's kind of like a meditation where I just get clear. And through the muscle testing, your body tells me exactly what you want and where you want it.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense how, because I've said this before on a podcast, but so the podcast is ultimately about mental health, but I suppose mental health is quite a reductionistic way of putting it, because it's not just dependent upon the way you feel mentally, isn't just dependent upon your brain, as you know, as you quite rightly point out. But so something like CBT, which has kind of become the most common form of treatment for like anxiety and mental illness and things, is one of its flaws is its inability to delve into the subconscious. And it's, I suppose eventually it does after repeated sessions, but it's very conscious, it's very surface level thinking. You know, it's like the iceberg of a very small percentage is on the top, and then all of it is on the bottom. But we don't really know what the subconscious mind is. What do you think the subconscious, do you think it's, because some people say it might be an energy field around us. Is it the, you know, body? What do you think it is, the subconscious mind?
I love the mystery. Just, I mean, I love, you know, not knowing lots of stuff and just kind of discovering. And I just love hanging out in the unknown. And there's so much we don't know. What is God? Yep. What is, you know, all these profound questions. So, but when I approach working with people, I create a mental construct. And the construct is that you are a body of water that's 100 feet deep. Okay, so your psyche, there's different levels, there's different depths. So okay. The subconscious is pretty deep, right? The conscious is the more superficial levels. And so if we take a statement such as, I trust myself, I believe in myself, I can accomplish, you know, whatever I want in life. And so we'll muscle test and I'll say, okay, I trust myself. Is that true down to 10 feet into your psyche, down 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet? So the muscle might go weak at a certain depth of the psyche. Now, that's just a mental construct that I made up. You can't prove that there's like a depth to that, but somehow that works really well. It taps into these different, you know, how deep,
yeah, of course.
How deep, I mean, it could be ancestrally, how, you know, I mean, it could be past lives, it could be all kinds of things. So that's kind of, you know, what it is. I don't find that to be as useful a question. How I work with it is I created this mental construct to be able to tap into these levels that if you said, I trust myself, you might hold strong if you did a muscle test. But the, as you drop down, that was true on these levels, but at this level, it's not true. And so it helps me to access levels that you couldn't get if you just asked, you know, a superficial question like, do I trust myself? Yeah, sure. Well, at what level of your psyche? So that's a whole different question. So I've spent 30 years figuring out deeper and deeper and better questions to get to that stuff that we might be missing, you know, if we don't ask the right questions.
Absolutely. And I think you are correctly sort of it's irrelevant what it is. What is relevant is how we can interact with it, because it doesn't. We don't have to put a label on it or a concretized construct on it. It's just in what ways do we interact with it best? And as you've said, you've created the 100-foot water model. So that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You spoke about generational trauma. Is it epigenetics, or is there a literature or a idea of or a notion of belief that is beginning to realize how our ancestral experiences can impact us, or is there nothing on that? Do you know?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about the science of it. You know, I probably have heard,
okay,
you know, as much as you have. You know, I have a friend who is a mayor of a city in California, and she was the first woman to cross Alaska solo on foot. This was when she was in her 20s. And it's a long story, but she got to a point in the river crossing Alaska where she had to build a 15-foot boat to get across the river and get upstream. And after she had finished this whole journey, she found a journal of her grandfather. And her grandfather had been a general, and he was assigned to the Northwest Territory of the United States. And he was out there surveying Alaska. And so he actually crossed Alaska. So she had this guy's journal. He crossed Alaska 100 years to the day from the day she started her journey.
Wow.
And he came to a point in the river where he had to build a 15-foot boat to get across and go up Alaska. So they did the exact same journey, 100 years to the day separate. And she had no idea. And so stories like that just blow my mind. And, you know, I think maybe there's an epigenetic, you know, connection that they'd had. But, you know, it's way beyond what you could call chance, right?
I think there was a Greek philosopher who believed that we were born with knowing everything we would ever need to know. And then it's just come to me. It's like, imagine you're born with knowing everything. And then there's like the unconscious, then the conscious, nothing in the conscious, everything in the subconscious. And then as you get old, and then as you age, one closes and the other gets bigger. He believed that human beings were born with everything we would ever need to know, and that we forgot it as we aged. I'm not sure if it was Socrates or someone, but that's an interesting, you know, one of those other mysteries of life. Will we know? Will we not know? But I think there's there could be a lot of evidence that might point towards that.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that children learn languages so much quicker. You know, it's almost like they have a wisdom that as we get older, they lose. And when I've tried to teach muscle testing to people, the younger they are, the faster they get it. So that's kind of in line with that idea.
Yeah, of course. Final question. What was your, have you ever had a breaking point in which you thought, I need to make a change, or I need to, what encouraged you to come up with the Witten method? I suppose that's kind of related to it. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. When I love conversations because they spark different ideas. And, you know, like one person says one thing and then sparks different
ideas. Yeah, absolutely.
I love the exchange when people get together. I mean, it's just wonderful. Yeah.
It's brilliant.
You know, if we're not attached to being the one in charge and we just kind of let it flow. You know, when I was in chiropractic school, I knew that's what I wanted to do, but my goal wasn't to be called doctor or get a degree. My goal was to, you know, figure out this incredible mystery of why people are not living in a state of total absolute freedom and self-empowerment. You know, how do we reclaim that that's been, you know, wounded and traumatized and get back to that state of clarity where we can all be brilliant and happy and creative and loving and, you know, create a heaven on earth. So I was in school and I, like I said, I was already learning muscle testing beforehand. And I dropped out of my heart rate went down to 32 beats a minute. And I realized, God, there's something really wrong. And I was doing very well in school, but I'd met my mentor and I really wanted to focus on that as opposed to, you know, the classwork. And so I thought, I realized after a few days where my heart was really functioning abnormally, I realized, oh, my body's telling me that my heart isn't in school, that I should drop out for a little while and focus on, you know, studying this other work. So I dropped out of school in the middle of the semester and went off, and I lost two semesters, but I went and did that. And so I just kind of followed my body's reading, and I studied that work. But I was, even though that work was really great, it wasn't healing things in me that I could still feel were blocked. And so I was like, what's missing? So with muscle testing, you get yes, no answers. So basically you learn to have a conversation with your own inner intelligence. And so I would lie in bed at night and say, what's blocking this? Where is it in my body? What can heal it? Is there a color? Is there a flower remedy? Is there some kind of frequency? What is it? And so I kept asking those questions for year after year, decades, and I'd develop different systems and I'd improve them and I'd get rid of parts. So I developed dozens and dozens of systems until I really kind of got to, and it's still evolving, but it's, you know, much more slowly. I'm pretty much there. It took me about 20 years to really kind of work through what worked and what didn't work and all the different dimensions and levels and simplify it so it's teachable. Yeah. And so it was just like, God, I'm still stuck. I'm still not the person I want to be. And so I just kept going until, you know, I figured it out. I mean, the only thing I'm gifted with is stubbornness. You know, I'm not like, I don't see auras. I've never seen a ghost. I don't hear voices unless somebody's actually talking, right? I know how to connect with my own intuition through muscle testing, and damn, I'm stubborn. That's my gift. So.
It's a good gift to have if you're aiming at something beneficial, though, isn't it? So
now I teach it. I teach it over Zoom course. Yeah.
Right.
And I love doing that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I mean, my goal is...
Yes, I was gonna ask more about the...
The point of the Zoom class is to teach people how to find and fix their own issues and become, you know... kind of their own best doctors. So, I mean, I want to give this knowledge away. I don't want it to die with me. I mean, at this point in my life, my goal is how quick can I give this information away? And so my whole goal is to teach this to anybody that really wants to, you know, to learn this. And I've tried to make it as simple as possible. All I need to know from a body is, what's your highest priority? What do you want and where do you want it in your body? And then my job is simply to deliver what your body asks for. It's as simple as that. What do you want? Where do you want it? And that's my goal right now is to
act as a...
Yeah, just to listen.
That's a brilliant goal, yeah. To act as a conduit for... our innate healing.
I'm a waiter. What do you want?
Yeah, right. Yeah. What do you want? I'll deliver it. Although you're like a, they've got the food, but you give it to them, or maybe not. You know what food to give them, but they already have the food inside them.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. I know what you mean. Yeah. You're a waiter. Yeah. You're a healing waiter.